Now you're in a hurry.
Yep. Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee is open. We are going to start with a public hearing on 3337A. Sue, if you could, and while Sue's reading through it, Mayor Lycan, you and whoever you want to bring up, why don't you come up first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3337A requires a city with a population of 50,000 or more within Lane County, separately from any other city within Lane County, to establish an urban growth boundary and demonstrate that the urban growth boundary contains sufficient buildable lands. It requires a city to begin compliance within 2 years of the effective date of this bill. And for your information, I distributed a revised fiscal statement. Initially, the conclusion was that was no fiscal impact, but that's been revised, and they placed a fiscal impact both for the city of Springfield and Eugene, and they've raised concern that this may, although they haven't concluded that it does, trigger an unfunded mandate. And for the record, we received three letters, 1,000 friends in opposition to 3337, Friends of Eugene also submitted a letter in opposition, and finally a citizen of Eugene, Fiora Starchild Wolf, also in opposition.
And Representative Byer, I'm sorry I did not see you in the room when I called the mayor up. I want to preface this part of our hearing today too with this. The committee has been fully briefed on the issues that are involved with both cities. As a matter of fact, as I look at the people in the room, most of you have been in to talk to me and talk with the other committee members, I think. And so just remember that with your testimony, this is a committee that is already very well informed about the issue. I'm going to give everybody as much chance as they need to create the record, but if you could keep that in mind as we move through the very long list of people to testify, I would appreciate it. Welcome, Representative Byer.
Thank you, Senator Avakian. Thank you for holding a hearing on this bill. I certainly appreciate it. This bill I introduced in cooperation with the city and the home builders. My concern that our communities were not adequately planning for new housing, and as a result that young people were being deprived of an opportunity to build an affordable home. Eugene and Springfield have been planning together for over 50 years. We've jointly planned for the growth of the two cities. Our area is one of the few that has a combined metropolitan land use plan and was one of the first to have its land use plan acknowledged by LCDC in the 1980s. Times have changed, and the two cities now really have different aspirations on how they should grow. And so that's where we're at. We certainly have tried to work with Eugene and encourage them to update their residential land supplies. The fact that they haven't, they've been doing a great job of infill and redevelopment in the city of Eugene. And I will say in Springfield we have two. So to their benefit, I don't really want to necessarily direct their growth the way they want to grow. It's just that the cost of their growth is adding to the cost of land in our community because people are moving out. We're directly next to it, but it's even moving out further into outlying communities. So what we're looking for is to basically have control of our own residential land supply and our own urban growth boundary and let Eugene plan their own growth in their city. I think that in Springfield we have probably more high-density housing even than in Eugene, if you look at the records. I obviously want this bill to pass very badly. I think it's very important. I know that in talking with Lane Shutterly on the unfunded mandate piece, the department obviously is not, they would like to do broader growth rather than smaller growth, or planning, broader planning areas rather than smaller. And that's their concern, but they also have concerns that Eugene is not stepping up and doing this. And there is, he has assured me that there is grant money available to help them offset the cost of this planning, if they have to do that. So I'll close at that, and turn it over.
Very good. Mayor Lycan and Mr. Grile, welcome. Whichever one of you would like to go next.
Well, thank you very much. And again, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and much appreciated. And good to see old friends as well. And I do want to make it short because we were able to meet with each of the committee members.
Mayor, go ahead and just state your name.
Oh,
we'll
apologize.
Get that on the record.
You know what? I'm so used to having the gavel in my hand, and I used to ask that question too. So, my name is Sid Lycan. Mayor of Springfield, and do you need an address?
Nope, that's
okay.
Good.
We require that, but okay. Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I know we had the opportunity to come in and meet with each of the committee members and talk about this bill and the importance that we feel for the city of Springfield. And I also submitted a long letter, and I didn't want to read from that letter as I figured there was going to be plenty of folks testifying. Bill Grile, the Development Services Director, is here. If you have any questions on specific areas, especially technical aspects from the city, but I think Representative Byer said it well. I mean, what we're looking for is trying to continue to manage our growth for our future, and understanding that the vital partnerships that will continue between Eugene, Springfield, and Lane County are very much important to us, whether it's through our metro wastewater system, our facilities plans, several other opportunities that we have working with the city of Springfield. But in this particular piece, we're at an area where we're going to be, we just completed our residential land study. It'll be coming out. And clearly what it's going to say is we're at a deficit. And we're at a deficit with regards to the 20-year supply. And so it's very important that we continue to manage where we're going. And so we're ready to move now on this particular aspect and this particular piece as far as our community is concerned. But as I have mentioned to the other committee and to the committee members, since 2001, we've enjoyed nearly $1 billion in new private investment in our city. And that's mostly on the commercial industrial side. But this last year, our city grew largest growth that we had percentage-wise since in about 25 years. And so folks are moving in, and what it has clearly done is depleted our supply of land, especially concerning residential. So this bill makes a lot of sense to us because we're prepared to move forward now. And again, it's about managing our growth and what's going to be important for our future in as far as the city of Springfield is concerned. And I'll just lastly, I just want to just make sure that I just leave this with you. Because what's important and states pretty definitively is our comprehensive plan states that the division of responsibility for metropolitan planning between the two cities is the Interstate 5 highway. It's about time the buildable lands and inventories were based on the same distinction. And again, if you have technical questions or if anything I can answer, I'd be more than happy to with Bill Grile and our Development Services Director. And Bill, if you have any additional testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Bill Grile, the Development Services Director for the City of Springfield. And in light of your comments about the understanding of the issues involved, I'm going to
pull the microphone around to you.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to cut my comments very, very short. Springfield is doing a residential land study on its own, in spite of the fact that Eugene has indicated that the timing is not right for their jurisdiction. The reason we're doing this is that for at least the last 2 years, the builders, the nail benders, realtors, and so forth that come to our counter looking for building permits, when we ask them what's the single most important thing we can do to assist you in your endeavors, they tell us, find us something to build on that's not as steep as the back of my head. And the reason for that is that we're out of land. And the initial study results that we have contracted with EcoNorthwest, a firm, to study the demand for housing in Springfield have suggested that we've got about a 1,000-acre shortfall right now over the next 20 years or so. Prior to 2004, Springfield was seeing more building permits issued, new housing starts, than some of the combined outlying cities in total. Cottage Grove, Coburg, Cresswell, and Vinita. But in just the last 2 years, each of those jurisdictions has seen more housing starts than Springfield. And it makes us think of the comment that Representative McPherson said prior to the House committee's deliberation on this matter, and he said that planning that's too restrictive is just as problematic as planning that's too loose and flexible. And what we see, frankly, is I guess what some have termed reverse nodal, and that's a serious concern to us. The last thing I would say is that I know that there has been some concern about the cost of this. I certainly concur with the revised findings of the Legislative Fiscal Office in terms of the fiscal impact to the city of Springfield. Our view is that those fiscal impacts are more than offset by the social benefits that result from the work that we're doing. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Morissette, very glad to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. I want to give a little bit of a historic perspective to this. I was elected to the Springfield City Council in 1987. I was elected as mayor in 1989. I served until 1999. That was a period of fairly rapid growth. Sony came to town. Why did Sony come to Springfield? Because we were the best prepared city that they visited. We had a plan ready. We made it happen. Sony ended up leaving, but that was a market decision based on their DVD production and so on. But in the meantime, they brought in Symantec and several other companies in the Gateway area. We would have been in the running if we had been able to be in the running for the new state hospital, which is just north of our urban growth boundary. I don't know if Springfield really seriously considered that, but it was out of the question because that was outside the urban growth boundary. While I was mayor, we did site the Blue Water Boat Company outside the urban growth boundary. That was not easy to do. We had to negotiate with the city of Eugene and Lane County to do that. I did raise a question later on to one of the Eugene councilors about no net growth to the urban growth boundary, because we would like to expand in certain places and we would take away in other places, and that was not even an item of discussion at the time. I don't want to interfere with what the city of Eugene is doing. That's part of my district. In fact, I represent part of the city of Eugene as well as Springfield and outlying areas. But I just think that there has been a different philosophy. We do have enterprise zones. We've always had enterprise zones. We do want to attract business. Our latest hillside development has been somewhat of a disaster, not completely, but the hillside side is sliding and so on. We don't have enough buildable land. We, during my term as mayor, said we weren't going to cross the rivers and the ridges. I'm not sure that that's a policy decision to be made, but we are hemmed in by two rivers. There is room for growth in various areas, and I think that historically we have always wanted to determine our own future, and I think this is an opportunity that would allow us to do some things that would benefit probably both communities, but I'm not concerned about I am concerned about Eugene, but what happens in Springfield is of the utmost importance, and so I support this bill, and thank you very much.
Committee? Questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Thank you, Senator. Mayor Piercy, if you'd like to come up and bring anybody from the city that you would like. Mayor, we're very glad to have you back in the committee hearing again.
Thank you, Chair Vakhtin, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Kitty Piercy, the mayor of Eugene, and with me is Susan Muir, our Planning and Permit Department Director.
Planning and Development Director.
Thank you. All right. So I'm here today knowing that there is only the remotest possibility of stopping the passage of House Bill 3337. Much has been said about the city of Eugene, our position on the buildable land inventory, and our metropolitan planning. So I just wanted these few moments to tell you the truth and set the record straight. House Bill 3337 is sponsored by two members of the legislative body that I know well and respect. Over the years, we have worked well together on behalf of the state and our communities. Thus, I am particularly dismayed that this bill is before you. The bill was introduced on behalf of the home builders, and the City Council of Springfield has made clear that they wish to expand the urban growth boundary and add housing for their community. Eugene knew the home builders wanted this expansion as soon as possible, but we had no discussion, that's right, absolutely no discussion with Springfield about the contents of this bill before it came to the legislature. I meet with the Mayor of Springfield regularly and yet did not hear this bill until it had been introduced. In fact, Lane County, Springfield, and Eugene staff had been planning meetings called the Little Look for electeds to mutually discuss metropolitan issues. This decision was made back in December, and our planning departments were given instruction to proceed with putting those meetings together. We have been participating in the initial set of these meetings this last month. Given our obvious intention to play in the sandbox with our regional partners, we were surprised to hear Eugene mischaracterized in legislative discussions. Many legislators are under the impression that Springfield had to bring this issue to the legislature because they had been thwarted by Eugene in past urban growth boundary expansion efforts. The truth is, a process for UGB expansion currently exists, and it is my understanding there have been two UGB expansion requests in the past, and both won approval through using the ongoing process. Therefore, I see no need for this emergency run to Salem. History says that the metro areas work just fine on this issue. Springfield says they want to go their own way. I believe that's entirely accurate. They do. However, for those of you who support our land use system, it is also true that League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, DLCD, Lane County, Thousand Friends of Oregon, all believe that keeping our UGB intact is in the best interest of good land use planning in this state. We agree. As to the buildable land inventory that is at the heart of this discussion, while it is true that Eugene completed ours early in the last periodic review cycle, we have always been in compliance and have always intended to be in compliance. Springfield refers to Council's most recent vote on the buildable land inventory. Our staff recommended to us that while we needed to update our inventory, with everything else on our list, this was not an emergency to do one now. Four councilors voted to do it now, four voted to wait. I broke the tie believing that in the best interest of our community at present. Because a new periodic review is not underway, we cannot get funding for the buildable land inventory from DLCD right now. If we wait, the coverage will be available. Because of the loss of federal rural school funding, our county is in an extreme stress, and the city of Eugene is being asked to help. We have already budgeted extra help for the Human Services Commission to replace county funding. We are looking at how to help with public safety, health clinics, and much more. We are stepping up as a good community partner in a difficult time. These things reach the top of our very tight, flexible funding right now for the well-being of our citizens. It is tough for an earnest and responsible community like Eugene to see ourselves portrayed and maligned as we feel we have been in the session in this matter. Although we are doing what is required, we have been picked out for a special unfunded mandate. Rather than fulfilling metro planning responsibilities, our next-door neighbor has concluded they want to go it alone. We successfully work with them on a multitude of issues, including transportation, tourism, wastewater, air quality, and our united front trips to lobby in Washington. Just a couple months ago, our Springfield neighbors had airplane problems and were unable to get to Washington to lobby for their particular projects. I took it upon myself to put on the Mayor Lycan hat and go to each of their meetings that they had booked to make a case for Springfield's requests. I believe strongly in working together. In the last few days, I've had a number of discussions regarding acceptable amendments to this bill. Our council has the official position of opposing the bill. Since it is apparent this bill will pass, no matter how strange that seems to me, I was asked to consider an amendment that would preserve the UGB, but would require Eugene to do the buildable land inventory. I was asked to look at the greater good for the state. I think this is a terribly misguided bill. Nonetheless, I'm a person who understands politics and the art of compromise. I'm willing to support the amendment should it come forward for the greater good of land use planning in the state. I would ask that if you decide to go that way as the wiser choice before you, that you consider expanding the time for the buildable land inventory to 3 years, since I know Springfield has already taken 18 months plus on theirs. I also understand there's grant money available to help defray the cost of the buildable land inventory. It would be good if complete coverage was part of this mandate so that it's not an unfunded one. I want to remind each of you and the people in this room that Eugene strives to preserve clean air and water for our state, to protect farm and forest land that is so valuable to us all, to work hard at living more densely and to fill our urban core rather than sprawl out. We work hard at recycling, lower energy consumption, alternative modes of transportation, alternative energy sources, and supporting businesses that produce sustainable products and use sustainable practices. We were chosen the greenest city in America by Green Guide because we strive to be stewards of our cherished land and to leave a good place for our children and our grandchildren and their children. And we do all of this with good hearts and high intention and because we're proud to be Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Muir?
Thank you, Chair Vakian and committee members. As the mayor said, my name is Susan Muir. I'm the Planning and Development Director for the City of Eugene, and I just want to add a couple of points. First, to start with, I want to talk about our status on residential buildable lands. The cities of Eugene and Springfield jointly satisfied our 20-year estimated housing needs by adopting the Eugene-Springfield Metropolitan Area Residential Lands and Housing Study in 1999. That plan established a 20-year supply intended to satisfy our needs through the year 2015. We are not currently required to maintain a rolling 20-year supply. We will be required to conduct a new analysis when we re-enter periodic review. Based on our rough calculations, and we did these in January of 2007, if the projections in our original acknowledged studies were accurate, we do have sufficient land to accommodate a 20-year supply until 2015. We realize that some in the community, many of them are here in the room today, believes that this is insufficient, but this is what we have laid out in our acknowledged plan. Each time we take an action, such as an adoption of a new regulation or the approval of a change in a plan designation, we have to make sure that it doesn't affect our surplus acreage. The 1999 study identified a surplus residential acreage, and depending on whether you take the high or low demand assumption, of about 800 to 1,800 acres. Our determination is, to date, we have not taken actions that would deplete that surplus. In other words, the city calculations show that, based on the residential land study's projected 20-year demand, there is still a net surplus of residential land. Our most recent calculations indicate that we have a surplus of approximately 350 acres region-wide. That may seem like a low number to some and doesn't match with Springfield's testimony, but keep in mind we are not required under current law to keep it a rolling supply. The current law allows that surplus to be depleted, and that we'll check in again at our next periodic review. We have been appealed on this and upheld. We are in compliance. The second thing I want to talk about is cost concerns. It's our estimate that a buildable lands inventory will cost about $100,000 for residential only and about $170,000 to $200,000 for industrial and commercial to be included. We don't understand that this would be fully covered by the state through grants. It might be partially covered, but not fully covered. We think that I added in the commercial and industrial because we think that if we look at a buildable lands inventory, we need to include industrial and commercial so that we can look at a holistic view of this, just like we would if we were going through periodic review. This will add to the timeline and cost concerns that we have. This would be a big task for us in the city of Eugene. Related to the cost, we think the results of a buildable land inventory may require us to do other tasks in order to be in compliance with statute, such as looking at solutions if we find we're short on land at this point in time. Those next steps will have an indeterminate cost that I don't think the state is stepping up to fund for us. The last point I'd like to make is, as Mayor Piercy said, the Metro Plan has a process agreed upon by all parties for bumping out an urban growth boundary. Springfield already has that ability. They have not initiated that process. Nothing has come forward at this point, but Eugene is ready to start the process should Eugene come forward. And thank you for the opportunity.
Questions?
Okay. Seeing none, thank you both very much.
Next, David Hinckley, Tony Bieda, and Bob Rindy.
Bieda,
sorry about that. Coming up, I gave the mayors a little bit more time to present their testimony. Everybody else, keep your testimony to about 2 minutes. So we have a very long list, a little bit shorter hearing today, and two more bills to hear. So if you could, 2 minutes, please.
I'm David Hinckley. I'm Vice President of Friends of Eugene. This is a solution in search of a problem. To date, Eugene has never stopped Springfield from expanding its boundary. So why are we here? They think, apparently they think that it's going to be turned down. They haven't made a presentation to us. As the mayor stated and Susan Muir did, we're in compliance. More importantly, we are also in the process of trying to become in compliance with a Goal 5 inventory, one that the city of Eugene is only approximately 15 years behind on completing. This is significant for two reasons. One, you would normally finish the piece that you haven't done first. And secondly, you can't do a residential lands inventory until you've determined what are the natural resources lands inside the UGB that have to be protected and can't be built upon. There's also several other large projects. The city's looking at whether or not it's going to acquire about 65 acres that are currently designated residential, all of which depending on when it's going to be done. I also disagree with Susan Muir. I think that the city's estimate on the cost is much lower than what it should be. My estimate's closer to $500,000, and it's several years, and it's also seasonally dependent, because the first step is a set of aerial photographs that has to be taken in the wintertime when there are no leaves on the trees, and so you can see the ground. So that's because that's what you need to figure out where you've got structures. Yes, you can do a hasty, quick 18-month process, but then what you get is the results. And I also agree with the city of Eugene that the need to do an inventory of all land being used so that you get a feeling for what it is, where it's at, and so that when you start doing trade-offs, such as people wanting to put hospitals where there's residential land, that you can then look at taking commercial land and making it residential when possible. And all of that needs to be done. The last thing is, the thing that bothers me the most is when you start with a bill that only applies to cities over 50,000 in Lane County, again, the question is, why is the legislature dealing with it? Because if you really want land use planning for Eugene and like 6.5 hours worth of hearings for minor projects, you're welcome to it, I think. Thank you.
Mr. Bieda?
Tony Bieda for Lane County. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'll be brief. I handed out for you a copy of a letter from the Board of County Commissioners of Lane County, which I delivered on letterhead earlier this week, but just want to make sure you had a fresh copy of it in your hands that articulates the reasons why Lane County is opposed to House Bill 3337. As a county board, we're committed to the land use planning process that's currently that is currently embodied by the Metro Plan and adherence to a single UGB for the metropolitan area. That seems to not only work well, but seems to be a best way to move forward these issues over a period of time, and we're still committed to that structure and that process for working through these issues. And so that is the essence of our concerns about this, and we believe that ultimately these issues need to be resolved back among the three major partners in the metropolitan area. Any questions?
Mr. Rindy, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll be very brief. I've handed you a page letter from Lane Shetterly. We also have serious concerns with this bill, and we've tried our best to express both in the House and as we've been able to talk to some of you that I think a very good compromise on this bill would be to cause through this legislation that the region examine their buildable land supply, and as a region, make the decisions as to how to expand the boundary. We think that would keep the region intact. It's too bad that one of the three regions in the state, and we think this is a model that we should have been using statewide, that we'll now divide that, and I predict what we'll see is probably other regions coming in with some of the same concerns in the next session. So I urge that you consider amending this bill. I understand the amendments have been drafted that would require the entire region to examine their land supply over the next 2 years. We would do our best to support that. And I'm certain that the cost would be about half of what it would be if each individual city does their planning. I have some other points that I've made in the letter, but I'll stop here and thank you.
Very good. Committee? Nothing. Thank you very much. The three of you, John Woodrow, Dan Egan, Terry Connolly.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much and the committee for allowing us to be here and speak before you today. My name is John Woodrow. I am city councilor for the City of Springfield, Ward 5, and I'm here both as a city councilor and as a citizen of Springfield. If you will allow me, I've been on the city council now for about 5 years. I was elected to the city council because I noticed Springfield had a lot of things going on. It was changing, and if you'll pardon the arrogance, thought I could make some good logical help in making the decisions that will continue to guide the city as it continues to grow. I don't have any prepared remarks. As I sat here listening to those that have testified before, a couple things came up. Number one, the land use study, there was mention that we had not approached the city of Eugene to expand the urban growth boundary through the process of the metro plan. Well, that does require a residential land use study before that can happen. In the short time that I have been on the city council, and I'm sure somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but it took over a year to get a metro plan change through by going through the process. If it takes 18 months for the residential land study and then another year, we're looking at potentially four to 5 years down the road before this would come about. I'm also a businessman, and having a lot of friends in both Eugene and Springfield, I've seen a lot of changes that have occurred that have prohibited Oregon citizens from being able to purchase property in Springfield because there's no land left for builders to build on. Consequently, the prices keep going up. Young people can't afford to buy a starter house anymore. They can't afford that in Eugene. They can't afford it now in Springfield. A few years ago, or a year ago, there was
Councilor, planning. Councilor, I'll need you to wrap it up pretty quickly.
I will, very shortly. Thank you, sir. There was planning Region 2050, and part of that plan was to situate people in the outlying areas, which is counterdictive to the state mandate of reducing vehicle miles traveled. Our ability by this bill to be able to expand our urban growth boundary and allow Eugene to maintain their own growth potential as they choose, I believe is a very good plan, and I would urge you to support that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Chair. My name is Dan Egan. I'm the Executive Director of the Springfield Chamber of Commerce, organization with over 850 business members. I'm going to really cut down on my remarks at honor your time here. But I am here to talk about two cities headed in different directions and the absolute need for one of them to move forward. The perspective of the Chamber on this issue is an economic development one. Springfield needs to move forward now to continue to attract and retain good businesses. Because we have a business-friendly reputation, because we've had the land in the past for development
Companies like Royal Caribbean, Cruise Line, Symantec, and Peace Health now call Springfield home. They provide over 15,000 jobs in the future. That's good for Springfield, and that's good for Oregon. Development can only continue if developers and investors see a secured future in which a city has its own destiny in its own hands. Cities cannot provide land and planning and infrastructure, the lifeblood of good employers, at a snap of their fingers. They must plan for it, and they must make a long-term commitment for that kind of development. Springfield wishes to do that, and they have the momentum to make it happen. Secondly, I think we know what happens when we do nothing or we process information endlessly. Economies and cities are organic entities that must thrive in order to grow and stay alive. And this is another one of the land use issues where without that land available, site ready, we're not going to do that. I'm going to skip to my last point, which is one size does not fit all in the case of Springfield and Eugene. We've tried to have a model that would contain the wishes and philosophies of both cities, but I would maintain that model is one of convenience that was forged in the resource-starved 80s, and not a true marriage of these two cities. For some time, it's been apparent to even the most casual observer and citizen that there are major differences in not only the current nature of the cities, but their singular futures. We are not headed in the same direction. I think we should be comfortable with that, but we should recognize the new realities and make a change. Lastly, I just would like to quote one of Germany's great leaders, in fact, their post-war leader, Konrad Adenauer. He was once asked about the future course of West Germany in light of the Soviet bloc he faced across the border. His response was, "We all live under the same sun, but we do not have the same horizon." Members of this committee, Springfield and Eugene, share the same sun and lots of times the same rain, but we don't have the same horizon. Your action can allow Springfield to move toward its own horizon. Thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my name is Terry Connolly. I'm here today on behalf of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. Our chamber supports House Bill 3337. We believe good land use planning requires having good data about buildable land inventories, and this bill enables Eugene and Springfield to obtain that data. This data then becomes a helpful tool for each jurisdiction and our metro community as a whole to make good planning decisions with respect to future public facilities and infrastructure, housing, and employment. We have been concerned about the land supply situation in Eugene long before this legislation ever materialized. And we've conveyed those concerns to the City of Eugene on numerous occasions. We believe responsible economic development requires having updated buildable land inventory data and demand analysis. In fact, the ability of Eugene to achieve some of their own growth management policies might be enhanced by having more current information. Notwithstanding the fact that employers in our community worry about the limited supply of industrial and commercial land, they also have a keen interest in these residential land supplies because of their ability to attract and retrain workers can be influenced by where their workforce lives or can afford to live. In other words, there is an economic development value to align housing and jobs. This bill would allow each jurisdiction to update their buildable land supply within the context of the existing metro plan, which is a good thing. In conclusion, we think this bill is a good step in the right direction to ensure that cities such as Eugene and Springfield have the buildable land inventory data they need in order to make good planning decisions for themselves and for the metro area as a whole. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Committee, any questions?
One question, please.
Senator Pozanski.
Terry, your comments, and I read the ones that you gave in the House, I don't think you ever made any mention as to the Chamber's position regarding splitting the UGB. It appears that the positions that were in here are dealing with the billable lands and the inventory. Was there discussion about the splitting of the UGB? And if so, is it reflected in your testimony?
We understand, Mr. Chair, Senator Pozanski, we understand splitting of the urban growth boundary is very much a part of this bill. Again, that would be done within the context of the existing metro plan, which would remain in place. And so separating the UGB, it seems to require, I mean, that's a, the data would still be needed to be collected by each jurisdiction. And so we are aware that's part of the bill, and as I said, we're in support of the bill as it is.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, three of you. John Chandler, Mike Ganson, Roxy Cuellar. Ganson and Cuellar, I understand you're both from the same organization. So if you could keep your testimony very brief and not repeat each other, that would be terrific.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Homebuilder Association. I've turned in written testimony as well as a letter from Bill Close, an attorney at law, practicing land use law in the Eugene area. Mr. Close submitted testimony in writing because he could not be here today. I'll be quite brief. I just want to point out a couple things about the legal issues behind this bill. It's been mentioned in previous testimony that Eugene is currently in technical compliance with the law that unfortunately is true. The law they're talking about is one that I had a hand in writing back in 1995. Had we known that Eugene Springfield were going to take 12 years to get out of periodic review, we would have probably written the bill somewhat differently. The notion that the second largest city in the state is in technical compliance with an 8-year land supply, even though they may not have to have a 20 like every other city in the state, strikes me as somewhat odd. This bill addresses that by having them do the land analysis. The second thing I want to point out is it's also testified that the Springfield's not asked for an expansion of the boundary. If I understand the metro plan correctly, and certainly how it applies in other parts of the state, similar issues, small parcels can be brought in without a great deal of rigmarole, if any kind of urban growth boundary can have no rigmarole. Large consideration of the boundaries, land supply for commercial, industrial, residential land, requires the study to be done. That's the piece that the city of Eugene has refused to do, but even by city council vote back in January. So the situation in front of you is one where one party wants to go forward, the other simply does not. We support this bill, obviously, because we brought it forward. I think it's also a good approach to planning in the sense, Mr. Chairman, members, this is a cooperative arrangement done by intergovernmental agreement. Under this bill, the rest of the metro plan continues.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Quayer?
Thank you, Senator Vakian. Roxy Quayler, Home Builders Association, Lane County. I want to assure the legislature that we did not come here lightly looking for a solution. The home builders have been looking for a solution for a number of years. I equate us to the canary in the mine. We're the first ones to know that there's a land shortage because we're the ones out there looking for land. Some of the problems that we are facing is we contracted with LCOG, for example, to give us an estimate on the amount of constrained land inside the Eugene-Springfield UGB. Springfield is the worst constrained. One out of every 3 acres in Springfield has a slope greater than 25%. Over half the land in Springfield has a slope greater than 25%. It's a serious problem. We have not come here to beat up on the city of Eugene, but there are people who want to build new homes in the city of Eugene. Eugene is admired as a city. People want to live there. We like to build homes there, but we are frankly running out of land. Mayor Piercy asked you to extend the date on the bill to 3 years. I encourage you to keep it at 2 for the simple reason that, again, nobody's out to beat up on Eugene. If there is a true diligent effort to get this land study done, nobody's going to be complaining. On the other hand, if there is an effort to drag their feet and prolong the process, then the 2 years is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ganson.
Hello. My name is Mike Ganson. I'm a home builder based out of Eugene. I'm a past president of the Home Builders Association of Lane County and currently the vice president of the Oregon Home Builders Association. I'm a husband and a father of 4 girls, and I am here in support of House Bill 3337. I started building new homes in Eugene Springfield area in 1994. At that time, land availability was a concern, but not nearly the crisis we have today. In the early years of this decade, the available land left was used up at an even faster pace due to our recent growth and the implementation of more and more environmental and regulatory restrictions placed on land, limiting it or rendering it unbuildable. It's because of this critical shortage of the available land within the urban growth boundary that several builders and developers, myself included, have gone to the outlying towns and communities in search of greener pastures. The problem is that these outlying towns and communities are not designed for growth. They have neither the adequate infrastructure, transportation, sewer, water, fire, police, parks, or schools, but more importantly, they don't have the jobs. And what I mean by that is when you restrict land availability to the nth degree, you force not only skyrocketing land and housing costs, but you also encourage elitism. and you force people to make a decision between home ownership with a long-distance commute to work or renting in the towns in which they work. All things being equal, they will choose home ownership. In our area, most family wage jobs are predominantly in Eugene and Springfield. By not expanding the urban growth boundary, you are essentially forcing sprawl and long commutes for those who choose and deserve home ownership. Eugene and Springfield has a land shortage crisis, and now we are asking you to help us do something about it. Let's use the urban growth boundary as it was designed, a tool to manage growth, not a weapon for no-growth advocates to stop or send growth to small surrounding communities. So I ask for you to support House Bill 3337. Thank you for your time and consideration in this matter.
Okay. Senator Atkinson.
One very quick question. Mr. Chandler, there's not a happy person in this room today. Perhaps you could tell us why you are a proud parent as of Saturday.
Bless your heart, Senator. Members of the committee, with your indulgence, I am delighted to put on the record the fact that my daughter Mary graduated law school from Santa Clara School of Law on Saturday. I was able to watch that. And I'd ask for her, you remember her in her prayers because she has a bar exam in front of her.
A little bit of reality, people are smiling again.
That we will do. Thank you. Andy Clark, Jim Welsh.
Chair Vakian, committee members, I'm Jim Welsh. I'm here speaking for Eugene Association of Realtors, Springfield Board of Realtors, and for Cottage Grove Board of Realtors. You may ask why Cottage Grove Board of Realtors wants to be on the record for supporting House Bill 3337, and it's for self-protection. The unintended consequences of a large jurisdiction not taking on their responsibilities for growth is pushing growth out to the outlying satellite communities. And that's definitely Cottage Grove. They're one of those. And so they want to be on the record. As for Springfield, it's definitely self-determination. For Eugene, it's probably both. But if we need this bill, we're hoping it'll go through. We really want to reiterate, and I sat with all three boards this morning, because they had board meetings, and they want to make sure that they support, on record, that they support the Metro partnership and Metro policy agreements. And they understand that this bill will not dissolve that, that it stays intact. And that's why they want to support this.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Welsh.
Chair Vakian, members of the committee, Andy Clark with the Oregon Association of Realtors. I just wanted to go on the record and state that the association is in favor of House Bill 3337. And for all the reasons that have been stated today, affordable housing, increasing buildable, residential buildable land supply, I just wanted to go on the record for the association saying we support the bill.
Okay. Thank you both very much. Joe Schweinhart and Lee Beyer. Started with a buyer, and we're going to end with a buyer.
Everywhere you look, there's a buyer.
So are you going to complain?
Not sure yet.
Mr. Schweinhart, why don't you go ahead?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Joe Schweinhart of the City of Salem. The reason I'm here today, I'll make it very quick. We oppose any retreat from what we see as a major cornerstone principle of Oregon state land use planning. That's the coordinated cooperative effort of all local governments in the urban area. And we think the potential retreat from that could hurt public services and make them cost more in the long term. And I'll just hand in my testimony and be done.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. For the record, I'm Lee Beyer, appearing today as a private citizen. I'm on vacation time, so I want to be clear that I've been not here in any other official capacity. You might ask, why am I here? My civic career started in 1978 in Springfield on a planning commission. I was on the planning commission for 8 years, and I followed that up with a little over 6 years on the city council before I joined the legislature. And when I left the legislature in 2001, I returned and was appointed by the council again to the planning commission, where I still serve. I have to tell you that this bill, I'm very, very proud of my city for asking to have it drafted and for my representative for putting it in. I was away when they did it, and I was surprised to see it back, but I think it's a good idea. A lot of this came in some discussions as a planning commissioner a few years ago, actually a couple of years ago, when we had a Planning Commission City Council annual meeting, which we do, and that was about the time after Terry and I had just bought a new house, and we were in that process, and I will tell you that we had been looking for a couple of years to be able to stay in the neighborhood we were at in the center of Springfield. And there wasn't a lot of land, and we finally found one. Finally, one of the Pioneer families had decided that they would finally convert one of their orchards into a real estate development. We bought one of the lots on that as they're developing the street. That lot was bought by my builder for $40,000. By the time my house was being finished, a young couple was buying the lot next door. It had been about 4 months. That lot sold for $65,000. Less than a year later, the last lot on that street sold for $125,000. The last street in the development, one for me, has panhandle lots in it, and they're selling for $125,000 to $135,000. The largest development that we have left in our city, which is on a really hard developed hill to go, are selling for $125,000 to $200,000. This is just bare land. My concern is affordability for young families and their ability to live in the city. Why are lots expensive? Primarily, lots are expensive because there aren't very many of them left in our city because of the constraint of the current urban growth boundary. We need to change that. Now, I will tell you, I know this bill has a side on Eugene. I really have less concern about that. I believe that every city, you know, as a former city councilor, I believe that cities have a right to determine how they want to grow and manage their needs. I will tell you that the expressions you've heard from my mayor and councilors today are not just the elected officials. Those are truly the expressions of people who live in Springfield. Springfield is a family town. It wants to have places where young families can buy houses and the dads and the kids can go out in the backyard and throw a ball around. We're not going to have that if we don't do something. Eugene has different aspirations. I think that's fine if they want to become a Pearl District. That's fine. Every city should have that right. And I would remind you that under current state law, every city does have that right to have an independent land use plan. That's what the law says. The problem that Springfield got into is it chose to go together and plan cooperatively with its neighbor. And that has worked fine for 15 years. But unfortunately, some of that has changed recently. The cities have different aspirations and want to go in different directions. The plan you have in front of you is a good and a reasonable compromise. It allows the two communities to continue to cooperate in positive ways. They will still work together on a combined sewer system for the area. They will still work together on a combined transportation planning, but allows them to go separate ways to meet their individual housing needs as the community desires it. It's really, truly a good compromise that doesn't denigrate anything. I would like to comment. I heard Mr. Rindy talk about LCDC's desire to have large regional plans, and I know that is their desire. We had something in our area called the 2050 plan, which I know is very similar to something Senator Vakian is familiar with in his metropolitan area. That would require, I mean, we have enough trouble getting two cities together, but that would have included 12 Lane County cities to try and do things together. I'll tell you, that's damn near impossible to get everybody to agree on things, and as it should be. You know, people choose to live in places for different reasons, and they should be able to create the communities that they want to develop and want to invest in. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll shut up and urge you to support this bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Beyer, very much. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3337A. I'm going to open a work session on 3337A.
Chair, I'd move House Bill 3337A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Atkinson moves 3337A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Committee, any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to put on the record, I don't support the bill. I've talked to the presenters of the bill as to my concerns that have been raised in some of the opposition testimony. The UGB splitting in a regional setting is not, I think, in the best light of land use planning. It does appear that we have a process that's ongoing now regarding looking at our statewide land use system through the Big Look, as well as what will be suggested by our own Land Use Fairness Committee through a meeting that we'll be having next week.
and I think it's premature to be splitting out. And as we've heard from even the city of Salem, who is in one of the other two regional type of configurations, that this may not be the best way for us to go. So with that, and all due respect to the sponsors of the bill, I will not be able to support the bill at this time.
Committee, any further discussion? Seeing none, Matt, if you could call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
No.
Aye. And with that, the motion carries. Senator Morissette will carry the bill on the floor. And with that, I close the work session on 3337A and open a public hearing on 2876A. Betty Merrill, if you want to come on up while Sue reads us the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2878A requires a state agency authorized to finance construction, purchase, or renovation of a state building to reduce the amount of energy the agency uses by at least 20% by June 30th, 2015, from the amount the agency used in calendar year 2000. It requires the agency to prepare a plan for meeting the requirement to reduce energy use and requires the agency to report periodically to the Department of Energy regarding energy use. It requires an agency that fails to meet the requirement to submit a biennial energy conservation plan to the department.
Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Merrill.
Chair Vakian, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betty Merrill from the Oregon Department of Energy. House Bill 2876 revises the State Energy Efficiency Design or SEED program, ORS 276. The SEED program directs state agencies to work with the Department of Energy to ensure that all cost-effective energy efficiency measures are completed in new constructions or renovations of buildings. In 2001, in response to the California energy crisis, the statute was revised to mandate that state agencies reduce their energy usage by 10% by 2005, and the base year was 2000. Today, we have 22 agencies reporting energy usage. 13 agencies have reduced their energy use by at least 10%, and we have 9 agencies that have not reduced their energy. What this bill will do is revise the 10% standard to 20% and by 2015. The bill requires state agencies to establish a plan for meeting that standard by January 1st of 2009. It also requires the Oregon Department of Energy to expand our list of existing qualified energy service providers. We currently have energy audits, auditors, building commissioning agents. It will expand to include energy management service providers and energy savings performance contracting. The department supports the bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Witt, glad to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31, here in support of House Bill 2876, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. The bill is intended to substantially reduce our state's carbon footprint, and in the process save energy, save money for our taxpayers, and presumably put Oregon on the path to a reduction in global warming in contributions to that. The substance of a bill is a 20% reduction in energy uses usage in state buildings by the year 2015. And the bill also envisions the use of private sector experts to assist in accomplishing this goal through the use, and the bill specifies energy audits, energy management services and control systems, capital improvements, operations and management procedures, and perhaps most importantly, at least as a funding mechanism, energy savings performance contracts. These items will be used to assist state agencies in the implementation of their energy savings plans and also to assure high-quality workmanship and performance standards in the energy savings process. The energy savings performance contracts assure that the entire cost of each state agency's contract will, in fact, be covered by the energy savings. So it's self-promoting and sustainable in that regard. The bill, as I said, will save energy, saves money, provides our state with vastly, or will provide our state with vastly more energy efficient buildings, and will promises also to employ a significant number of people to that end. And with that, Mr. Chairman, again, certainly appreciate your hearing this bill, and would ask that each of you consider your approval of this bill. Thank you.
Committee. All right, Representative. Ms. Merrill, thank you very much. Jeff Bissonnette, Stephen Kafouri, Duke Shepherd. And if the three of you could, about 1 minute apiece. Mr. Kafouri, why don't you lead off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kafouri. Today I'm representing a company, Johnson Controls. Johnson Controls is the 75th biggest company in the country, and the part of the company that I work for does energy conservation. The Bill 2876 comes to you from a group including Department of Energy, Governor's Sustainability Office, the Clean Fair Energy Coalition, Osberg, AFL-CIO, and my client who worked together on this. I think you understand what the bill does. I just want to go into a little bit of detail on how energy savings performance contracts work, because the question would arise, how are we going to pay for all this? And the answer is it will be self-funding. My company and a number of other companies offer energy savings performance contracts. They're defined by ORS. They are exempted from the competitive bidding process. And they allow a company like ours to come and work in cooperation with the state agency or the local government, and we define the energy savings that needs to be done. We draft a plan for remediating those that problem, and we guarantee that the savings will come out of the cost will come out of the savings, and we guarantee that for the life of the contract. So for example, a 10 or 15 year period, we can guarantee that that state agency will have 100% of the costs taken care of by the savings. Because we're going to make that guarantee, it's a money-back guarantee, we'll actually write them a check if we don't make it. We underestimate the actual savings. So in reality, most of our clients get money back, as much as 20 or 25% cash back. It's a good deal for everybody.
Very good. Mr. Bissonnette?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, statewide collaboration of a variety of groups working on energy issues. One of the members of our coalition is the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council, which is the trade group of clean energy efficiency businesses, from one-person consultancies to very large companies like Johnson Controls that work on these issues. Just here to express support for the bill. As you've heard many times this session, the cheapest kilowatt hour is the kilowatt hour you don't have to produce in the first place, and that's kind of what this bill does. Be happy to answer questions about any specifics that the committee would like to know about.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Duke Shepherd, Oregon AFL-CIO. I would just say the bill is smart, cost-effective, it promotes innovation, and it will ensure that the work gets done by highly skilled people here in Oregon. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, seeing nothing, thanks to the three of you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2876A. Open up work session on 2876A.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2876A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, for moving 2876A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I'll be recorded as a no on the bill. I don't see the need, especially with we already have. This committee's already worked on another green building bill, and seems like a more appropriate way to do it.
Very good. Any other discussion? Any objections? Yep. Senator Byers is noted. And with that, the motion carries. Senator Bates will carry the bill on the floor. And I'll close the work session on 2876A, open up a public hearing on 2785A. Sue, while you're getting that out, Katie Fass, Christina McNitt.
Mr. Chair.
Debbie Colbert.
It's okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2785A allows a water right holder to apply to the Water Resources Department through an expedited application process for a certificate to appropriate water for hydroelectric purposes within an artificial water delivery system and under an existing water right if certain conditions are met. Provides that the certificate issued under the expedited application process may not have its own priority date and that does not grant a right to divert water for hydroelectric purposes.
All right. Thank you.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, Katie Fast with Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. 2785 is actually requested by Oregon Water Resources Congress and the Oregon Farm Bureau. And the purpose of the legislation is to streamline permitting for small hydro projects that are going to be utilizing existing water rights and within current delivery systems. Water Resources Department has made these type of permitting processes a priority through a lot of the agency's work on renewable energy. However, there's still a lengthy process for these type of projects. Under the current process, an applicant such as a farmer or irrigation district wanting to generate electricity and putting a hydro pump within their current water delivery system must go through an application process for a new and separate water right, even though they're going to be more efficiently utilizing their current water certificate. This is a lengthy process that will take over 6 months. And it costs the applicant a minimum of a $1,000 processing fee. Within 2785, a holder of a certified water right may apply for an expedited process, which will reduce the permitting processing time and reduce the fee down to $500. This process would be limited to projects exempt from the Federal Regulatory Commission, FERC. These are smaller projects, normally 5 megawatts or smaller. The legislation retains a public comment period and protections to the resource.
Yes, passed.
Yes.
Go ahead and get to the punchline.
Okay.
We need to be on the floor in 4 minutes, and there's three more people to testify.
No problem. It's a good bill. It would require that fish drains would be in place for the projects. The water right would have to be retained in its current use and current rate and duty, and with that, I'll stop.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Christina McNitt. I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which is a trade association of water delivery districts, including irrigation districts, water control districts, flood districts. I'll sort of skip to why we think an expedited process would be great, and that is that irrigation districts can utilize conservation agreements in their communities by piping some of their existing water canals delivery systems, and in some cases save up to 40% of the water through loss that would have occurred in transmission loss, through evaporation, through seepage. So when you do these piping projects, then you have so-called new water. Everyone in Oregon knows we don't have new water. We're over-appropriated as it is. But state statute allows us to create new water through these conservation projects. We have to put a certain portion of it in stream for fish purposes, and the remaining part you can actually use, put to beneficial use for growing crops on properties. The downside with these conservation efforts is that they're very expensive. And so if we can assist districts by providing an expedited permitting process for these smaller hydro projects, that helps generate some revenue, which offsets the cost to the farmers. And with that, I'll be quiet, but that's one angle and one reason to support House Bill 2785. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Colbert?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll just state for the record, I'm Debbie Colbert with the Water Resources Department, and we support the 2785A, and thank the Farm Bureau and the Congress for their work on addressing some of our early concerns through the amendments.
Thank you. If one of you wants to give up your seat to Mr. Moskowitz, we'll let him get something. Oh, you cleared the room, Dave Moskowitz. That's okay.
Chair Vaki, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz, here today on behalf of Trout Unlimited, and
and Water Watch as well. Water Watch staff worked very closely with the proponents of this bill, and the process resulted in addressing our concerns. And we think it's a good result, and we're pleased to be able to work with everybody.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Colbert, you mentioned amendments. You were talking about the House amendments that are already in the bill, right?
You can just nod.
Yes, he says yes. Okay, good. That'll close the public hearing on 2785A and open up a work session on 2785A.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2785A to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson, for moving 2785A to the floor with the due pass recommendation and discussion. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Atkinson, you'll carry the bill. And with that, I'll close the work session on 2785A, and we are adjourned.